Lois? Have you seen Kyle Rayner?
Yeah, Chief. He was heading to the one place in this world even my credentials won't get me in.
Ow! That's weird. Someone's been eating Cracker Jacks. Rayner! There you are. I've been looking all over. Are you okay? Yeah, sure. Well, you better be. I need drawings of the shuttle, front page spread, cross sections, burn areas, wing damage, the whole enchilada. Rayner, are you with me?
Sure, Chief. Front page, enchilada.
Then what are you still doing here? Artists.
Back to the bin.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spataro, and this week I am here with just, and by just, I mean just, Scott Gardner. No one else. But who else do I need to talk comics with?
Am I not enough? Don't answer that.
Feels like something, some sort of like biblical thing where he looked and said, is this all there is or something like that. But yeah, we are just pulling back the curtain for just a moment. We are scrambling because it turned out that Bill was unavailable and it turned out then that Dave was unavailable. So we had to scrap the plans we had. And we picked up a book that we had planned on doing a while back, but never did. And here we are looking at Green Lantern number 50. But on the other side of that coin, I think Green Lantern number 50 is a significant enough book that it's worthy of an episode of its own.
Oh, absolutely.
An episode of its very own.
I don't know. I don't know if I would describe us as scrambling, but yes and no. I had the foresight some time ago. We'll see if I'm able to keep up with doing this, but I had the foresight some time ago to start just having some prefaces in the can, just in case, you know, we find ourselves in a spot or whatever where I don't have to go, well, I got nothing and I don't have time to read anything, because that has happened to us a number of times. So I've got a few things out there held in reserve, and this was one of them. But as you say, I feel like this one could spark some serious discussion, and more than anything, I'm really hoping it might spark some discussion amongst our listeners. You know, either chiming in via email or via the forum, I just dated myself. Not the forum, but the Facebook group, rather. The forum is long since a thing of the past. But the Facebook group, I'd love to hear some chatter about this, because I have some opinions on this that I expect are probably a little bit controversial, or maybe a lot controversial. I don't know. But anyway, we'll go ahead and we'll dive straight into this. You guys know what the hell we're talking about. So, we are looking at from DC Comics, Green Lantern. Now, this is volume 3. I forget what year the third volume started, but this is volume 3, number 50. This is the March 1994 issue, so that'll give you an idea of what we're talking about. It's bannered at the top, Emerald Twilight Part 3. So, March 1994 is what it's bannered. It was actually on sale on the stands, according to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, on January 18th, 1994, for a whopping $2.95. Features a dynamic glow-in-the-dark cover of Hal Jordan and his new dud streaking away from an exploding central power battery on the planet Oa. Now, I've actually seen some conflicting information concerning the cover. I've seen it attributed to both Kevin Maguire and to the team of Mark Bright and Romeo Tangal. And I'm tempted to believe it's the latter. I don't see the Kevin Maguire in there, and I'm usually pretty good with picking his stuff out. So wherever it was I saw that, I think that's in error. Anyway, as I say, this is Emerald Twilight Part 3, The Future. Is what's the official title on this. It was written by Ron Mars with pencils by Daryl Banks and inks by Romeo Tangal. So on the planet Oa, Hal Jordan stands fist clenched, sporting 10 green power rings, one on each finger, including his thumbs, crackling with emerald energy. He has come to the Guardian's planet intent on absorbing the energy of the central battery in order to gain enough power to resurrect his recently nuked home, Coast City. "It's all going to end here, isn't it?" asked Jordan, in what I assume is a play on the cover's ominous banner of "It All Ends Here." Jordan is speaking to Sinestro, whom is once again clad in green and sporting an emerald ring. He has been re-endowed with the power by the Guardians of the Universe in a desperate last-ditch attempt to stop the rampaging Jordan. Sinestro points out the delicious irony of Jordan playing the part of the returning prodigal son and he, Sinestro, being held up as Oa's last hope. Jordan, unamused, orders Sinestro to get out of the way or he'll kill him. Sinestro, disbelieving, continues to taunt Jordan and calls the whole thing a charade, telling Jordan that nothing ever changes and that he's still a hero, one of the good guys. "Not right now," Jordan replies, and proceeds to unleash a powerful blast from his rings, which knocks Sinestro back. Sinestro points out how unsporting it is to wield such overwhelming force, the 10 rings, to Sinestro's 1, and says that even if Jordan manages to win, he'll never know for certain if he could have taken Sinestro in a fair fight. Jordan replies that he has no doubt, but wants there to be no doubt in Sinestro's mind, so he discards his extra rings, facing his former mentor and arch foe with just his original ring, his will, and his rage. As the Guardians watch impassively, the two mortal enemies face off and exchange power-ringed blows. Sinestro rants and raves about how much being reduced to energy and imprisoned inside the central power battery sucked, and Jordan counters that he deserved worse and that the Guardians must be mad to have released him. Sinestro continues to taunt Jordan, and the fight grows even more vicious, Sinestro taking note of how Jordan has changed and is carrying so much rage. The fight continues, and after a mutual power ring burst simply repels them from each other, it turns primal as the two combatants resort to hand-to-hand and simply wail on each other. Jordan gains the upper hand and beats Sinestro mercilessly until his foe begins to pass out. But Jordan props him up, saying that they're not finished yet. But Sinestro responds that they're both finished. "What are you talking about?" demands Jordan. "I finally beat you. I won." "Did you, Jordan?" Sinestro replies. "Look at yourself and answer me." Jordan gets Sinestro in a headlock and, saying that he should have done this a long time ago, snaps the villain's neck, killing him. With seemingly no one left to stop him and the Guardians apparently too stunned, unable, or simply unwilling to act, Hal proceeds toward the central battery. But a large hand clamps down on his shoulder and says, "No," then proceeds to belt the bejesus out of him. It's Kilowog. How the hell he got there after Jordan whooped his ass and stole his ring last issue is never addressed. Kilowog says he can't let Hal kill anybody else, but Jordan is quick to point out that he didn't kill the Corpsmen he fought on his way to Oa, but simply took their rings because he needed their power. Kilowog knows what Jordan intends by entering the central battery and asks what will happen to all the GLs out in space or engaged in fights somewhere when Jordan drains the battery, the source of their power. For the first time, Hal hesitates for just a moment, but then stammers out that he can't think about that right now. He's got to set everything right. Kilowog attacks him again and beats him viciously until finally, feeling he has no other choice, Jordan incinerates Kilowog. Jordan realizes he's crossed a line and there's no going back. He discards his ring, no longer deserving of it in his own eyes. The Guardians appear and agree with his self-assessment. Then they say that he will be punished, but he scorns them for their inaction and impotency. He expresses all his rage and frustration with them, saying all they ever did was turn their back on him. They point out that tampering with what has been is the most grievous crime of all, but Hal is beyond caring. It's too late to stop it, and he no longer wishes to. Hal turns and enters the central power battery. The Guardians realize this is their end. They elect one of their own, Ganthet, to survive and carry on for them. They pool their collective power and bequeath it to Ganthet just as Jordan absorbs the central battery. There is a massive emerald explosion. When the dust settles, Jordan emerges in a new armored outfit and finds the charred remains of the Guardians of the Universe, all dead. He steps on his ring, shattering it, and then streaks off into the stars. After a time, Ganthet rises alive from his hiding place under the bodies of his brother Guardians. He reforges Jordan's broken, discarded ring in the palm of his hand and then streaks off into the stars himself. On the planet Earth, a young man stands in an alley behind a dance club, getting some fresh air when he observes a green shooting star streak across the sky. Suddenly, the object turns and heads straight for him, bursting into a blinding flash of light. When it clears, a small blue-skinned man stands before him and says simply, "You shall have to do," and gives him the emerald ring. The young man slips the ring on his finger, and on the last page, a full splash, he finds himself instantly transformed and clad in the traditional uniform of a Green Lantern. "Oh, man," he thinks to himself. I think my life just got a lot more complicated. Next issue, welcome to a new Emerald Era. And that is Green Lantern Volume 3, number 50. Paul, what did you think of this one?
I read this one when this came out, and I thought it was pretty cool then. I still think it's pretty cool. See, the thing is, and I think somewhat misguidedly, I think DC, misguidedly but correctly, it's going to be, you know, I'm going to contradict myself in some ways, but I think the DC powers that be decided that Hal Jordan was boring, or at least that he was perceived as boring. And I'm going to explain why I say misguidedly is because I do believe in the old axiom that there are no bad characters, there are bad writers. And with a good writer, you can make any character interesting. I think they let Hal Jordan become a very, very white bread character when they didn't need to. They could have made the stories worthwhile, but I think they got a little lazy with it, and I think the image became boring. And I think they needed, because the image became tarnished, I think they needed to shake things up. And that's why they brought in the new Green Lantern. And they really did shake things up. And so I have all sorts of thoughts about this, and I hope I'm going to express them all and not sit here after we're done recording and say, damn, I should have talked about that. Because this also comes off of the Death of Superman or Resurrection of Superman storyline with them destroying Central City and all of that. So it's really tied into a lot of big shakeups that were going on at DC at the time. I think they did a good job introducing the new character, and I think it's all well done. And they did good with this for quite a while, in fact, you know, where they had him learning I think he had to forge a new power battery, and then he had to learn how to use all his powers, and then eventually he reformed the core. But the reality is he eventually became a character not unlike Hal Jordan. So either you wrote him well or you didn't, So that's where I feel like it's a little misguided. And then they brought back Hal Jordan because there was some popularity or nostalgia for that character. they had to come up with a way to justify what Hal Jordan did in this issue, and that is pretty hard to do. He knew he crossed the line and he didn't care anymore. I mean, that's the way the story is written. So then to revive him afterwards was not an easy task, but they did manage to come up with a story as good or not good as it is, with the whole parallax thing that they came up with. But I really was kind of excited about this whole turn, what they did here, because then with Hal Jordan becoming Green Lantern's basically greatest villain at that point, there's a lot of cool, areas to be plowed here. And I think they did a lot of it. I remember when this came out, I was reading some sort of interview with Mars, and he was saying that one of the edicts that they had was that they weren't going to let him use the power ring the same way twice. He was always going to have to come up with different constructs, which I thought was cool, because as you read the issues, there were a lot of, interesting things that they came up with. So just, that's my very, very long-winded way of saying I just thought this was very cool. And by the way, issue one of volume three came out in 1990.
Okay. Yep. Just
to follow up on that, I'm sorry. The previous series, volume two, ended with issue 205 in 1986. So there was almost a four-year gap between the two series.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize it was quite that long a time.
And I'm just looking at issue 205, and it was, at that time, it was actually the Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah. I have since collected all that stuff, retroactively, but I've read very little of it. I have a very checkered history with Green Lantern. I was never really a fan of the character until this point. This is what kind of got me interested in Green Lantern for really the first time. And it was just simply, it was comic shop talk. It was hearing the excitement going on in the shop as this event was unfolding and everybody was talking about it. And I'm not usually that guy that's like, I feel left out. I got to know what's going on. But since this was DC and he is a central character, Green Lantern. I mean, he's part of the Justice League and all that. And, the Guardians are such a big part of DC lore and all of that. So I was interested to go check it out. And I remember I couldn't, by the time I decided I wanted to check it out, there were issues I couldn't get. So I had a few gaps. But I don't believe this was one of them. I believe I did read this new as it came out or shortly after it came out. And I found it incredibly exciting. Finally they were doing something interesting with the character. And I don't know, my thoughts then are very similar to my thoughts now. For one thing, I think this took real balls. I think this was a very gutsy move, because this was very different from, say, Captain America giving up being Captain America and adopting a new identity and somebody else. That whole thing had been played out. Iron Man had done it. Captain America had done it, that sort of thing. This was different. This was like an Anakin Skywalker fall from grace, to the dark side type of thing. And it was shocking. But I think it's really well done. And it pains me that I've seen a lot of references to this, over the subsequent, 30 years, since this came out, referring to it as, schlocky or poorly executed or, doing a disservice to the characters, blah, blah, blah. And I don't see any of that. I think, yes, Hal does become the bad guy, but he doesn't become, a cackling, monologuing, over-the-top, evil villain. He's just a guy that's, he's lost his way and takes a dark turn. And that, to me, is much more interesting. I kind of wonder if maybe this whole thing would have gone down a little bit easier and, you know, wouldn't have constantly been, you know, because the thing that drove me nuts beyond this point was when they just couldn't ever let him go. He just kept coming back and kept coming back until eventually he does completely come back. And then this whole thing is, you know, not retcon, that's not quite the right word, but it was all whitewashed away in what I always considered was a very unsatisfying and frankly kind of an insulting way. The only thing I ever liked about his resurrection and return to being Green Lantern was that Batman didn't buy it. I liked that. I liked the tension mm-hmm. between him and Batman, because Batman was the one guy I can recall that kind of called him out and said, I'm not buying it, you know?
Right. But I remember they did a crossover, not a crossover, they did a story arc where Kyle somehow teamed up with Hal.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like Hal from before this happens. There was some sort of a time twist in it and everything. And yep. I think that story, and it was actually very well executed. It was kind of a cool story, at least as I recall. But I think that story also put the nail in the coffin of this story a little bit, because that's when they decided, you know what, we want to bring Hal back. At least that's the feeling I got. Like, I think the reaction to that crossover or that storyline was positive enough from the Hal perspective that they said, oh, see, there is a fan base that wants him back. And I think they felt they had to come up with a way. And I think, like I said, it's, or you said, less than satisfying. I think that's a pretty fair way to describe it. But I don't think there was any other way to redeem this character. I think they had to come up with something, and to have him basically being possessed by the Parallax, whatever, impurity, you know, that was at least a way of saying, hey, he didn't have control over what was going on at this point. And, you know, it's kind of the Dark Phoenix thing.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing they did there. But, you know, Kyle Rayner, again, he was a really cool character. It's one of the things about the Green Lantern Corps, and I'm not going to profess to be an expert on the Green Lantern Corps, because I'm just not. But I think one of the beautiful things about that is you can have as many of them as you want. So, you know, you can have Jon Stewart, and you could have Kyle Rayner, and you could have Hal Jordan, and they can all exist simultaneously because they're just all Green Lanterns because there's a Corps. So I think that's a cool aspect of it, and it did allow them to bring him back but not get rid of the character of Kyle Rayner. I do think, you know, sometimes they got a little clumsy in how they used him when they brought Hal back. But, you know, at least they didn't just say, oh, yeah, we're going to just get rid of him now. You know, kind of in Ray Thunderstrike.
I was just looking up here because I couldn't remember when Green Lantern Rebirth was published. And I'm kind of shocked to discover that it was published in 2004. That's only 10 years later, because one of my things I was prepared to say was that if they were going to undo all this, then they shouldn't have waited 20 years. Because I honestly thought it was about 20 years that Kyle was around as the Green Lantern. And apparently it wasn't. It was only 10 years. But still, what's your feeling on that? 10 years is still a long time. That's long enough for there to be an entire generation that grows up where this is their Green Lantern. And I know that was the case with my kids because, I mean, they were never big comic readers, but they loved the characters. And so they knew Kyle from, like, Superman, the animated series, and, you know, from the action figures that were out at the time. You know, all the action figures that were out at the time were Kyle from, like, the, what was it called? The, oh, gosh, I can't think of the name of it now. The Total Justice, I think, was the name of it. You know, stuff like that. So they knew him, but they did not know Hal Jordan.
So, but there was a point when they had to realize that their audience was aging, and that they were losing the younger audience anyway. Right. As far as comic buyers go, you know, maybe for the mass media, you know, that's a different story. But I think, you know, they realize that, you know, that we're their core audience now, and we're all getting older, and we all, you know, whether we were into the character or not, we all grew up with Hal Jordan being the primary Green Lantern. But they always had kind of a substitute Green Lantern thing going anyway, because again, you had John Stewart, you had Guy Gardner.
Yeah.
You know, there were points when other people took over the mantle, and it was not a problem. I remember when they brought Hal back. I think what they did was they let him have, you know, they rebooted the series, I think, back to issue one again. And then he started as you know, the primary Green Lantern and that. And then I think they came out with, they started a series of Green Lantern core issues, and that featured Guy, John, and Kyle.
Yeah.
If I remember right.
I read
right.
those, you know, when they first fired up, and except for the art, I did favor the core book more. Because the core book, for one, it concentrated, as you say, on the Earth GLs that were not Hal Jordan, but it also concentrated on the core. You know, it concentrated on Oa and the other Green Lanterns and everything. So I just found that to be the more interesting title. But that's not to say that. That series, I'm not sure what volume, I guess that must be volume 4, I think, that it was badly written, because it wasn't. I mean, it was well written, it was engaging and everything. But to me, it was just the whole thing of, you know, pushing Kyle to the side and Hal reemerges. And very quickly, it was like all was forgiven. And I just felt like, for one thing, it felt wrong. I don't know. It's weird, because this whole thing puts me in kind of a weird place of frankly, I wonder if I'm being a hypocrite with this, because I really like this. I really like the idea of, you know, the hero falling from grace, kind of falling to the dark side. I don't like him necessarily becoming a villain, but just that, you know, he's lost his way and he takes this dark turn and everything. I think you're right. I think a lot of this stems from the fact that a lot of people did find him very boring and kind of white bread. I know I certainly did. That's the biggest. I got nothing against Hal Jordan. I just thought he was kind of a dull character. He didn't really seem to have much of a character or a personality or anything, whereas Kyle really did, or, you know, they developed one for him. But where it makes me feel like maybe I'm, you know, I wonder if I'm being a hypocrite, is that if they were to do this with Superman, who, you know, takes plenty of insult as being boring and white bread and everything to people that don't read him, you know, that don't follow him or that are not.
Well, that write him improperly.
Yeah, exactly. So if they were to do that with Superman, I'd be furious. Well, actually, they did do that a few years ago, and I was furious. So I don't know. I don't know what the difference is, other than I wasn't a regular reader of Green Lantern. I wasn't particularly invested. And this made me invested. This made me interested. So I don't know. But I also try to be respectful of the people that, you know, came before me that were invested in this character right from when, it, you know, when did he debut? It was that the 50s?
I think it was, I in believe the 50s, it was right? The late 50s.
Late 50s, early 60s, something like that in Showcase. Yeah. So, I mean, I know he'd certainly been around a long time, but I wonder, you know, is that enough? You know, is that enough to make a character a sacred cow, just simply the fact that he'd been around for a long time? I mean, if he's not selling, if he's not thrilling anymore or anything like that, then it's time to shake things up. And that's definitely what this did. I honestly think the debate should be more of, you know, was this the way to do it? Not so much. I don't know. It's weird. It's hard to explain, but so I enjoyed it.
The Green Lantern series that starred Hal Jordan for the first time looks like it started in 1960.
60.
I'm not sure when the showcase issues came out, so those were probably in 59 or so.
Right. I had a chance to get that once. It was at a like a yard sale, garage sale type of thing. I very distinctly remember that comic being in a pile of comics that I looked through, and I passed on it. And you know why? Because
you didn't like Hal Jordan.
Hal Jordan. Such a stupid, stupid. How much is that book going for today? It's got to be a couple $1,000s, I think.
I'm sure.
Crazy.
Sure it is. Well, whatever. Crazy. You can't kick yourself over the bargains you missed.
I know.
But, you know, again, I still come back to, I don't believe there's dull characters. I think there's badly written characters. I mean, not, let me change that. There are dull characters. but a dull character should be a dull character because they want him to be a dull character, not because, oh, we can't think of something creative to write for him. That's right. That's just showing a lack of imagination. And I think that's, I don't want to go as far as unforgivable, but it certainly means whoever's writing that book should not be writing it. You know, there's ways of spicing up the characters. And again, you know, I mean, we come to the Superman thing. I always think it's the stupidest argument ever when they say, well, he's too powerful, so we can't, you know, nobody can beat him. Well, if he's too powerful, then you just come up with a character that's more powerful if that's your problem. It's a, you know, okay, right. Superman is strong enough to do this. Here's a guy who's even stronger. You know, right. I mean, that's the easiest problem in the world to fix. And that's not the problem. The problem is creating the emotional and psychological drama in the battles and the trials and tribulations that a character goes through. So, you know, it's not just a matter of coming up with a viable threat. That's a lazy argument for lazy writers to use. Now, Hal Jordan, you know, I think he, you know, writers often fall into a malaise. You know, they come up with some creative things to do, and then they kind of run out of ideas. And that's why you got to switch the writers on books periodically and let somebody new come in with some fresh ideas. But, I mean, you know, in you know, the highlight years in the, I guess it was in the very early 70s when they had the Denny O'Neill, Neil Adams, you know, Hard Traveling Heroes books. You know, you and I have talked about how some of those books are dated and all, but, you know, they were very exciting and they were, you know, they really put them on the map as far as collectible and all of that. So to say that you can't write this character in an interesting way is just, to me, it's, again, I'm just going to keep using the same word. It's lazy.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think the common denominator there is I've spoken about this before. I can't remember if it was on Back to the Bins or not. But one of the things that drives me crazy in comics is when you have a character that is sometimes they're outright. They're a great character. Sometimes there's just simply a character that could be great. You know, they have potential, but for whatever reason, they get presented one way and they run for a little while and then their series ends and there'll be a gap and then they'll reboot it or they'll restart it. You know, he'll regain his title or whatever. And they do the exact same formula that they did the last time. And it'll run a few issues and then it gets canceled and it just keeps happening ad nauseum. And right off the top of my head, I can think of Aquaman, Captain Marvel, you know, the Shazam Captain Marvel. And to a certain degree, I think Green Lantern, this, you know, Hal Jordan Green Lantern. And rather than change the character, you know, not change the character, but change their setting, change the environment, change the thing, the trope that's going on, they just keep trying to do the same formula over and over, and it just doesn't quite work. I think one of the wonderful things about Kyle Rayner is that all they really did was give the ring to a different character. He still has to operate with the same basic rules and everything. But look how more exciting, or at least in my opinion, the Kyle Rayner was, you know, as opposed to the stuff that immediately preceded it with Hal Jordan. And I think a lot of the reason with that was that Hal was just simply stuck in a rut. Not only was he kind of a boring white bread character, at least to me, but then all those barnacles that was on him, every time that they would present him, they just kept drudging him out. So you have Carol Ferris and, you know, they're on again, off again thing. And, you know, Ferris Aircraft, and you've got Tom, whatever his name was, Kamalko or whatever.
Pie-face.
You've got the same stupid villains over and over, you know, Goldface or whatever his name, Goldbug or whatever the guy's name was. You know, I mean, so it was just the same tropes over and over again. You know, if there is any common denominator between like this early part of the Kyle Rayner run and Hard Traveling Heroes back in the day, is that during that time of Hard Traveling Heroes, he wasn't necessarily working for the Guardians. You know, he wasn't off doing cosmic things and, you know, all those tropes that you normally associate with Hal Jordan. He was just, you know, doing a Buddy Road picture with Green Lantern and Black Canary. And so it was different. It was shaking things up a little bit. And I think you need that with characters, especially, you know, when sales should tell you everything. You know, if the sales are stagnant, then you got to shake things up. And that, you know, that's the biggest thing that I'll applaud, you know, the creative team with it, you know, especially Ron Mars, is that, you know, he came into this title, I forget which issue he came in, but he hadn't been on the book long when he did this. So you talk about hitting the ground running, man. I mean, you know, he did, and he immediately upset the apple cart in a huge way to change things up. And it worked. I mean, it got people talking. It got people buying. Yeah, it got some people pissed off. But then not only are they pissed off, they're pissed off and buying the book because they want to see what's going to happen next, you know? So, I mean, it worked in that aspect. Unfortunately, it's just, you know, much like Wally West, for some reason, not Wally West, but Barry Allen, rather, you know, much like Barry Allen, you know, they just couldn't let the guy go. You know, he couldn't, you know, because, I mean, I feel like it's probably okay to spoil this all these years later, but I mean, eventually Hal dies, you know, and I feel like the way he died should have been enough of a redemption for him that now he can go to his eternal rest. You know, he can go to his eternal reward because no, you don't think so?
I don't think they were going to ever let that happen.
But I mean, don't you?
Because then they made him the Spectre for a while.
Right. I mean, no, I hated that. I hated that so much. And yes. I primarily hated that because for one thing, you're I don't know if corrupting is the right word, but you're co-opting, I should say. You're co-opting another character in order to perpetuate Hal Jordan, which is unfair to the Spectre, or at least unfair to
Jim Corrigan.
But then also, it's just another one of those, okay, he's still around. You still haven't haven't cut the apron strings. You know, he's still there. And I just felt like, I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Zero Hour and all that nonsense, but actually, no, it wasn't Zero Hour, was it? It was
the one when the sun was going out.
Yeah, what the hell was the name of that? Yeah, I can't remember the name.
Something Night.
Yeah, Final Night. That was it. Yeah, I'm not the biggest fan of Final Night either, but at least that was a send-off for him, and it was a redemptive thing. You know, he sacrificed himself to reignite the sun to save the earth, you know, save everybody. Okay, that, you know, that works. I'll give you that. I still like his fall from grace, but at least that gives him a heroic end. Now he's done. Let him alone. And they just couldn't do that. They just couldn't let him alone.
But I gotta think that whenever they had one of these points where they could just let him go, there was a little bit of a fan buzz that oh, Hal is back or something. You know what I mean? And I think they were getting letters and whatever. And, you know, sometimes it's the vocal minority. You know, sometimes the minorities have the biggest voice, and that's all that management is going to hear. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, when they did those things, there was a little bit of a hue and cry to bring him back. And as I said, the one saving grace to that for me is that they didn't shit can the character of Kyle Rayner in order to do it. They right. did kind of shuffle him to the back of the bus a little bit, which I wasn't crazy about because I did like the character of Kyle. Yeah. And he was a little bit different. But to me, the big appeal of Kyle and the thing that kind of gave this a jump start when you brought him in there is, okay, now he's a new guy in this situation. And it's, again, it's like you said, it's when somebody else took over the role of Captain America, when somebody else took over Iron Man, you know, when Thunderstrike was Thor.
Right.
You know, they have to learn how to do everything all over again, and they have to get the connections with people. And, oh, you don't know that I'm the new guy. You know, there's all these things that go on, and it gives the writer the ability to get through, you know, probably 2 years of books without having to really struggle to come up with a storyline at all.
Right.
And I think, you know, that's a nice thing to happen. But, I mean, you can shake up the status quo with an existing character without having to do that. You know, you could fling Hal into a part of the universe he's never been in before, and maybe depower the ring, and he's got to figure out a way to get by, and he's got to, you know, create things. Isn't that what they did with Planet Hulk when they did that?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a way of reinvigorating the character by just putting him in a totally unfamiliar situation and letting him have to figure out a way to get around it. It, in its own way, it's the same thing that they did here by putting Kyle in here, except they just, you know, kept Bruce Banner as the Hulk instead of making somebody else do it.
Right.
So there's ways to do it. Again, you just have to be a little creative as a writer. I don't even think you have to be incredibly creative, because I'm not incredibly creative. And I can come up with scenarios that would make it more interesting than some of the things that they did. And, you know, I'm sure after a while I would lose my steam and you'd have to say, okay, now we need to have somebody else come in here and come up with some new ideas. But there's definitely ways of doing it. Like I said, I think when they did it here, it was a good thing because it was exciting and it was fun and it was well written. But there is still an element of laziness that I see there, because you're giving up on a longstanding existing character in order to do it, or at least you're trying to give up on one, rather than let's fix what's wrong with this character.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's an excellent point, actually.
But again, know. You know, let's focus on this issue a little bit more, because I'm open to talk about the change in atmosphere more before we're done today. But I really thought, again, that this was a well done issue as far as that particular plot goes. I love the fact that he had this knockdown drag out with Sinestro. I love the fact that Sinestro goaded him into putting down the other rings. I thought that was really cool. And I love the fact that when push came to shove, he snapped Sinestro's neck. You think that I'm still the heroic guy I was. If we're going to have him fall from grace, then let's have him fall from grace. Snap. You know, that was cool. I really liked that they did that. You know, Kilowog, the same thing. I mean, you know, snapping Sinestro's neck is crossing a line. Vaporizing Kilowog is leaving that line so far behind you that you can't see it anymore. You know, that's not killing your greatest villain. That's killing a guy who's been your ally and a hero in his own right.
I've often wondered if that was kind of, if that was the mistake, or if that was the thing that made it impalatable to the fans, you know, the Green Lantern, you know, the invested Green Lantern fans. Was it the death of Kilowog? Because it had been a long time since I'd read this, so the rebirth was fresher in my mind than this fall from grace was. And I remember in Rebirth, in the subsequent series, that they had to bring back the people that were killed. But if you read all the issues of this, the only one that we see him actually kill is Kilowog. He actually says right in this issue, I didn't kill anybody on my way to Oa. It's Kilowog that says, well, once you drain the battery, you know, you're going to kill people because there's going to be Green Lanterns that are out in space, or they're fighting for their lives or whatever, and suddenly their power will go away and they'll just die. But we don't see it happen. It's really only Kilowog. But I wonder.
And there's a big difference between killing somebody with inactivity. You know, you're not there and you just do something that, you know, that's going to impact them, but you're not directly killing them. You know, you're not slitting their throat. You're just not doing what you need to keep them powered or whatever.
Right.
There's a difference. I'm not trying to make a moral judgment. I think morally, it's the same thing. Murder is murder. But there is something about killing somebody in hand-to-hand combat as opposed to doing something from, you know, light years away that's going to cause them to pass on when you're not going to even see them. You know, there's a directness to it that changes the event, and it changes the ability to redeem the character.
I feel like it works really well. Now, I like Kilowog. I think Kilowog is always a really fun and great character. But if he had to go, I think this was actually a good way to do it, because one of the things, again, that really, really works for me in this is that it's very human. You know, Hal doesn't just turn a corner and go from hero to, you know, cackling, you know, drumming his fingers villain, you know, mustache twirling villain. He is a broken man that, you know, he's just kind of falling apart. When he kills Kilowog, he sobs. You know, he's broken over that. And when he confronts the Guardians, he's got tears in his eyes. I mean, tears running down his face as he realizes, you know, that he can't, there's no going back, and he can only go forward, and he's doomed. You know, he's gone beyond a particular point. I like all that. All that really works for me. And so that's why backtracking or backpedaling on all this feels kind of insulting to me, because I feel like this was really excellently done. If it had to happen, it was done very, very well. It's excellently written. And you can feel, I mean, for the first time, I can feel something for this character. You know, he's absolutely broken over what has happened to him.
I don't disagree with you. And I guess ultimately the question presents itself of, should DC's editorial staff have allowed this to happen? If you're going to feel like you can't let go of this character. You know, and some of it, I wonder if some of it doesn't have to do with just financial reasons, that you don't want to let the character go and, you know, no longer have the rights to it. If you haven't, you know, if you legitimately have the character die in the book and you're never going to resurrect him, then sooner or later your rights will lapse to him.
Right.
I don't know how many years it is that you have to publish or whatever. I don't know the copyright laws on that, but you know, it's similar to when Marvel stole the title of Captain Marvel,
right?
You know, but you know that you know they had, and there were points where they had to have a title or a series coming out with that title in order to maintain the rights to it, you know, purely for financial reasons, and then they made the editorial mandate that they were going to do something with it. So I'm wondering if there was some point where they said, you know, yeah, you could do this with the character, but we have to make sure we maintain ownership of him somehow. And they, you know, they weren't going to just let him die. I don't know. I don't know if there was any kind of a thing like that, or if it was just a, you know, just a fear of if they let him go, you know, that there would be an uprising from the fans. And I mean, to some extent, I think there was, but there was also, as you said, a level of excitement with the Kyle Rayner character that was really, you know, people were excited by it and by the stories that they were coming out with and how well they were written. And again, it may have been the biggest mistake when they did that five issues where, you know, he teamed up with Hal Jordan from the past and, you know, they developed a friendship and all of a sudden, you know, we saw the Hal Jordan of the past, and I think they faced off against Parallax somehow.
Yeah, they did.
If I remember it right, and I think there may have been some fan mail and whatever saying, "Oh, it's so good to see Hal back and written the way he should be written," and blah blah blah. And I think editorial might have said, "Hey, you know what? We got to bring Hal back."
It was still quite a ways beyond that, though, where they did bring him back, at least as Green Lantern. That they did bring him, you know, they mutated him into the Spectre. Is that what you're talking about? Where
he no, became, I'm thinking when they decided to go with Rebirth.
Yeah, that was still quite a ways down the road, though, as I recall, anyway.
I'm trying to see if I could find when they did that storyline.
I want to say it was like right around like 120, something like that. So actually, that would be about the halfway point, I think, in Kyle's run, because Kyle came in here at this issue, and then the last issue of this series, I want to say, is like 181, I think, something like that. So if it maintained
181 is correct.
Yeah, if it maintained a monthly schedule, then that would have been about halfway through. See, this is where I really, really, really miss our buddy Sean Engel, because Sean was our resident Green Lantern expert, and I'm wondering if he would have any insight or answers to two big questions I have. Is that, for one, I was always under the impression that it wasn't so much fan demand driving Hal coming back as it was that people within DC themselves couldn't let him go, like Geoff Johns in particular. He was a superstar at the time, so whatever he wanted, DC tried to give to him. And when he wanted to bring him back, I think DC capitulated because he was one of their cash cows, you know, one of their big stars. I could be dead wrong about that, but that's always been a big impression of mine, was that a lot of Hal's resurrection and return as the Green Lantern was actually driven by Johns. But again, I don't know that for sure.
Johns was writing it when they brought him back.
Yes. Oh yeah, absolutely.
So I would think it was his, and Johns has always shown himself to be a fan of the classic DC characters.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, wasn't he also behind Barry coming back, or am I wrong about that? I've never read any of that stuff.
I'm not 100% sure. I don't remember. It's been a long time since I did read it.
I'm also wondering, when you take Kyle's run as a whole, you know, from when he took over next issue through the end of this series, and you compare it to the same number of issues retroactively of Hal Jordan having been Green Lantern, how would the sales compare? I'd be very interested to know which one sold better. Because I always had the impression Kyle was the better seller, but I don't know that for certain either. So if he was selling better, why bump him to the background and bring back Hal? But I don't know.
Well, I think your speculation that it may have been for Johns, I think that may be reality. I think, you know, he was their superstar writer at the time. And I think he may have said, I want to write Hal Jordan. So they're like, okay, that's what you want? Then that's what you got. And right. I think when they did Rebirth, and when they did have the first few issues of Green Lantern, when they, you know, when Hal came back, I'm sure the sales were high on that. I'm sure when Kyle first became Green Lantern, the sales were high on that. I would want to compare the sales compared to the market at the time, because you have to factor in whatever the market is. You know, like the market today is very different from what it was 30 years ago.
Right.
But just, you know, factoring in market differences and all of that, I'd be curious to see what the sales were of Kyle as the Green Lantern after he had been on a run for, say, 30 issues or so, 40 issues,
right,
as compared to Hal in the same situation.
Right.
Because I think in that situation, I think you may be right. I think Kyle's numbers might be superior, but I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah, I'd like to know, though. Well, I'm hoping that somewhere in our listening audience, there's some hardcore Green Lantern fans that have been screaming at their podcast the entire time, and that'll chime in on this whole thing and maybe give us some answers, or at least, at the very least, just give us your insight. What do you think of this? You know, did you love it then? Did you hate it then? Do you love it now? Do you hate it now? I'd love to hear, you know, from the fans and from the listeners. So definitely let us know. But, I enjoyed the hell out of it. I really dug this, and I've long meant to go back and start again with the Kyle Rayner run and read it through to completion. And I think I just might do that.
Well, I think we should rate this book.
All right. Well, I'll go first since it was my book. I like the cover. I am a sucker for the glow in the dark. I'm not much for gimmick covers, but I like glow in the dark gimmick covers. So that aspect of it is cool. However, I don't really care for the Parallax look and the Parallax costume. I'm a little perplexed by why they would even have him in that costume on the cover of this book. I think with this being, you know, his quote-unquote final appearance as Green Lantern, he should be in his classic Green Lantern look in this one, I think. So I feel a little bit cheated by that. But artistically, yeah, it's a pretty cool cover. And, you know, it's definitely eye-catching and all that. So cover-wise, I will say, I'll say a solid B on the cover. It's not the best cover, but it is cool and it is dynamic and that sort of thing. I just don't care for the costume he's in. Interior art, I think I'm going to give it a straight up A. I love it. I think it's very well done. There's very little of it that is weird or wonky or anything like that. It looks very, very good. This was dynamic, very well presented. And there's a number of pages and panels that I think are just spectacular. So yeah, beautiful art. And then the story is a straight up A+ for me. I loved it. I thought it was great. I was like, I mean, I remember reading it when it came out and being like, holy shit. And rereading it for this, I still have the same reaction. I feel like, wow, this really took some guts to do this. And if it was going to happen, this was an excellent way. I mean, you know, the closest comparison I can think of in pop culture would be, you know, Anakin falling to be Darth Vader, and that was executed nowhere near as smoothly and excellently as this was. So it was very well done. I just think, you know, over the course of this Emerald Twilight, you know, this little mini within the series, I think it was very well done, where you see a guy go from despair and hopelessness and just descend into complete, you know, villainy, frankly, by the end of it. And it's sad. It's very emotional. It's very well done. And it's very sad. My only regret with the whole thing is I think when he streaks off at the end of it, they might have been best served for that just to be it for him, at least for a good long while, to where you just don't know what became of him. You know, what did he ever do? But that's you know, that's just speculation. But as an issue on its own, it's excellent. The only thing in the issue I really have any criticism of is the pinups at the end. I don't like a single one of the pinups, but that's a minor quibble. But yeah, excellent book. I will give overall grade on this. Actually, you know, this is one of those greater than the sum of its parts type of thing. I'm going to give it a straight up A+. I think it's a fantastic book. Highly recommended. I enjoyed it.
All right. The cover is eye-catching. I think it calls to you to buy the book. So for that reason, it absolutely succeeds in its goal. But to break it down a little bit better, I'm not crazy about the perspective of the Green Lantern. You know, he's got a giant shoulder pads and tiny little feet. you know, it's that aspect of it I'm just not totally thrilled with. But overall, it's a good solid cover again, and I think it serves its purpose. So I'm gonna say a B on the cover. I think it's very good. The interior art, I think it is dynamic. I think the storytelling is excellent. I think the battle is very, very well set up and just put together. I think the pacing of it is basically nonstop. So, you know, every aspect of it, and this is one of these books where if you didn't want to read the dialogue, you kind of can pick it all up from the artwork. So it really succeeds on all of those levels. A couple of the faces, not that I think are bad, but I don't think they're like A+ material. But that's about the only criticism I can even give it. And that's searching for something to criticize, to be honest. So I'm torn between an A- and a B+ on the artwork. I think I'm going to say an A- because it really just serves its purpose again so well. And the story, I'm with you. It's an absolute A plus. There's no question about it. You read it and you got to catch your breath when it's done. And the book overall, again, I'm total agreement with you. The total exceeds the sum of its parts. It's an A plus book. This is one, if you don't have it in your collection, you should probably want to have it in your collection. You know, it's just an excellent story. And it's, you know, you mentioned the pinups. The best pinup is actually the final page of the story when Kyle has the Green Lantern costume.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's that. So this, you know, I was thinking about it. This serves, we didn't call it such, but this serves, if you remember, we had started to talk about doing a feature called Second Look.
Yeah,
taking a look at some major events, major books, major whatever, and kind of putting it in perspective, looking back on it. And I think we really did that talking so much about, you know, not only this book, but its legacy. So
absolutely.
This was a second look at, episode, and I really enjoyed it. I'm glad you picked up this book, and I'm glad I was here for the recording on this one, because I think, if my memory is sort of pulling back the curtain a little bit for everybody, I think when you first mentioned you were going to do this book, it was when I was going to be down on vacation. And I think you and Dave were going to record without me, and I wasn't going to be a part of it. So thank you to you and Dave for not recording.
Well, I'm sorry Dave couldn't make the recording. I'm hoping he, I'm hoping he's okay for not being part of this particular one, but, if he did have thoughts he wants to give on this one, I would love to hear it. So,
and I also echo your thoughts that I'd love to hear from the listeners as to what they thought of this story, what they think of this episode. You know, chime in, everybody. You know, we have the Facebook page. We have several listeners and Facebook page members who are very active, and I really enjoy interacting with them, and I would love to see even more of it. So, you know, let us know what you think. Give us whatever they call Apple Music, Apple Podcasts, whatever. Give us 5-star reviews if you can, because that helps people to hear us. And, you know, I like when people hear us. So thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Good night.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiMonzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.
In brightest day,
in blackest night,
no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power.
Green Lantern's light.